This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U-Mobile.
Good morning, this is The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mukhtar, together with Wong Xiaoning. 24 hours ago, Russia sent military troops into Ukraine. Ahead of the invasion, Russian President Vladimir Putin declared that Russia could not feel safe, develop, and exist because of what he called a constant threat from modern Ukraine. Why does a country 28 times smaller than Russia pose such an existential threat to the Russian Federation? Joining us this morning to discuss this is His Excellency Oleksandr Nechitelo, Ambassador of Ukraine to Malaysia. Ambassador Nechitelo, good morning. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm sure it's been a very difficult night for you.
Good morning, Shazana. Thank you very much for having me.
Can we start with an update of the situation on the ground in the 24 hours since Russia launched its attack? What do we know about the situation?
Indeed, it's been almost 24 hours since the Russian missiles hit Ukrainian cities, and the invasion was followed by the ground attack from the north, from the south, and from the eastern directions. At this moment of time, our armed forces engage in enemy in all directions. We managed to stop the attacks in all directions and to inflict heavy casualties on the enemy. So far, we are talking about a few hundred of soldiers killed, around 30 tanks been also destroyed, and more than 100 armored personnel vehicles, seven aircrafts, and six helicopters. Generally, the situation is under control. The government exercises full control over the territory of Ukraine. What we are talking about is that the enemy failed to break our morale. The morale of people is very high, and the shock is gradually transformed into anger. People are angry, and angry, I mean, in a good sense. There are thousands of civilians who are lining up to receive the arms and to protect their own homes, their own land. It's been almost 24 hours, and the country is managing to sustain itself. So far, we also managed to receive a lot of international support, and that's also very important to us. I think we've seen in the news that the whole world is rallying its support towards Ukraine. For everyone, it's very clear who is invader here and who is protecting their own land. Ukrainians are very peaceful, generally, people. We never attacked anyone in our history. But for the past few months, we've heard continuous lies that Russia is not going to attack Ukraine, that the military buildup on our borders is only the exercises, and it meant to protect Russia. And this is the good question that you posed at the beginning. How can a country which is so much smaller than Russia can pose a threat to Russia itself?
Ambassador, can I interrupt shortly? I want to ask you about what the situation is in terms of the combat areas. Are they affecting civilian areas? Has the combat situation entered cities, for example, or is this still focused around military areas and structures?
There were civilian targets hit in few cities during the airstrikes and later on during the artillery shelling, particularly one of the cities in the eastern part of Ukraine, Kharkiv. There were some civilian casualties. The worry and development is also that the invaders are threatening to hit our nuclear power plant stations. Don't forget that Ukraine generates 60% of our electricity from the nuclear power plant station. They took control over Chernobyl nuclear site. So Ukraine informed the International Atomic Agency that the invaders took over the nuclear facilities, certain nuclear facilities, and that's foreign. However, we don't panic. We are in full control. And of course, all the war crimes that has been reported will be later on put to the attention of the international community. And we accumulate all these materials for the later trial.
Ambassador, the big question, I think, on everyone's mind is trying to understand why Russia launched this invasion. And what do you think President Putin's end game is?
I think the biggest threat that in President Putin's mind is a successful Ukraine. Ukraine is a free and democratic country. We've been exercising free elections and a succession of power for the past 30 years since Ukraine's independence. Even in the past 8 years, despite of the war, I would remind you, actually began in 2014. Simply yesterday, it began the full-scale invasion. Previously, it was a hybrid warfare, which involved some parts of Ukraine. However, despite the war, we managed to restructure our economy. The economy has been growing. And a successful democratic Ukraine is the biggest threat to Russia in terms of ideology, because Russian ideology has always been saying that the Russian way is the only way for the Slavic people. However, Ukraine and other free nations showed that there is another way. There is a democratic way. We don't want to have autocracy, and we will not let anyone to dictate our choices.
Ambassador, can you help us understand the historical ties between Ukraine and Russia? Because there is a sizable Russian-speaking population in Ukraine. I think the languages are, people can speak both languages. I'm wondering how this fits into the narrative of President Putin, that what they're doing is trying to defend Russian-speaking peoples in Ukraine.
Kyiv is the cradle of the Central and Eastern European civilization. The history of the capital of Ukraine, Kyiv, is more than 1,500 years old. So just for you to put in a perspective the history of Moscow, Moscow itself was founded much later than Kyiv. It's less than 900 years old. Definitely Ukraine or Kyiv is the place where it all began, the civilization. So there are many historic ties. However, when it comes to the differences in terms of religion, in terms of culture, in terms of language, we are different people. Ukrainians, Belarusians, and Russians, we come from the same, let's say, civilization that originates in Kyiv. However, we have entirely different mindset, entirely different set of beliefs, and the language is not a barrier. In fact, it's something that used to unite us. A lot of Ukrainians, as you said, are bilingual, and I can tell you even more. Perhaps 50 or even 60% of our armed forces who fight with the Russians now are Russian-speaking. So it's not the issue of language. It's the issue of different values.
So what do you make of Russian assertions that this attack is to protect its people, including Russian citizens, subject to genocide in Ukraine? Those are the words of President Putin.
This is ridiculous. And I think United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres answered that. Genocide is a very specific judicial term that is defined by the international law. And what is happening in Ukraine is nothing but genocide. In fact, those territories of Ukraine, which were liberated from invaders in 2014, they enjoyed a peaceful life. And just before the invasion, they were a lot of mass demonstrations in the cities of Mariupol, in Odessa, saying that, thank you very much, Mr. Putin. We don't need your liberation. We are Ukrainians.
Ambassador, I will like to shift our attention to Ukraine's military strength at the moment. Earlier, you gave reassurances that the country is still very much in control of the Ukrainian military. I'm wondering how prepared Ukraine is to defend the country, given that the data available suggests that Russians outnumber Ukraine military power by 5-1. Is this, in the end, just a game of attrition to them?
Well, the numbers are there. However, you have to understand that we are defending our land. And even from the pure military point of view, if you are in defense, you don't need a lot of superiority in terms of the numbers. That's the first point. The second point, we are talking about purely the armed forces. Now, a lot of Ukrainians, yesterday, President Zelensky announced the general mobilization. Every Ukrainian man, the age between 18 and 60, who is able to take up arms, will take up arms and protect their motherland. So we are defending our land. We are on the right side. So we are entirely capable of doing it.
But Ukraine is, of course, not a member of NATO, and hence there isn't an expectation that NATO will send boots on the ground to Ukraine. But is there some point where perhaps you would seek foreign military support?
Any help is welcome. But let me reiterate again, Ukrainian armed forces and Ukrainian people are entirely capable of protecting and defending our land.
Ambassador, we are going to take a quick break. We're speaking to His Excellency Oleksandr Nechitelo, Ambassador of Ukraine to Malaysia, on The Breakfast Grill. We'll come back with a discussion on why diplomatic efforts have failed in this situation. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Thanks for staying tuned to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Wang Xiaoning. We're speaking this morning to His Excellency Alexander Necitelo, Ambassador of Ukraine to Malaysia, on the situation that's developing there. Ambassador, we received a WhatsApp message from a listener just now, Kevin. He's asking about what the situation is for everyday people in the Ukraine in terms of how are they surviving at this point. We've seen the pictures of long lines leaving the city of Kiev, for example, people trying to cross the border into Poland. What is that like? What are you hearing from your friends and relatives on the ground?
The situation is generally calm. People first rushed to buy certain first necessities. However, now things are under control. The only interruption, of course, the sirens that sometimes wail in because of the continuous Russian airstrike. The latest airstrike over Kyiv, the capital, took place just a few hours ago. People had to seek shelter in the subway stations and in special shelters that are designed to withstand the airstrikes. So, but generally, people are remaining calm, and all the critical infrastructure is functioning. Electricity, water supply, everything is in place.
And I'm curious, Ambassador, how much supplies do you really have if, let's say, there's a blockade in Ukraine, let's say when it comes to food, which is critical?
Ukraine, don't forget, Ukraine is the largest producer of wheat, one of the largest in the world. So we are the breadbasket of Europe. We have sufficient reserves to sustain not only us, we are feeding half of the world as well. Ukraine, by the way, is the largest supplier of sunflower oil to Malaysia and also one of the largest suppliers of wheat to Malaysia. So in that sense, we have sufficient reserves, don't worry.
I want to turn our attention to diplomatic efforts, Ambassador, which have been going on for months now, if not years. We've seen all the different countries shuttling back and forth between Ukraine and Russia. Why have diplomatic efforts failed to resolve this standoff? And I'm not just talking about the last few months, but as you mentioned, this conflict actually started way back in 2014. Why has there been no progress on this since then?
I think the answer is very simple. Because of the lack of sincere commitment on the Russian side. I think from the very beginning, it was a premeditated plan to attack Ukraine and to destroy Ukraine as the country. We've heard it in the speech of President Putin when he ordered the recognition of the so-called republics. He doesn't understand the right of Ukrainians to exist as a country. And that's a fundamental issue. All other things are secondary, and despite of all the efforts of the international community, the diplomatic effort unfortunately failed. Our president reiterated many times, Ukraine is ready to discuss in any format, in any meeting. We are committed to peace. He wanted to meet President Putin. He wanted to engage directly. He wanted to engage international mediators. We are open to any sort of negotiations. However, on the other side, there is a lack of sincere commitment.
So this wasn't hampered by the fact that in Ukraine, you've had four different presidents in the last 6 years?
Ukraine has a democratic system of succession of power. Every 5 years, people elect their leaders, and the leaders being elected with a certain mandate. The thing is that the leader's change does not mean the fundamental change of the policy, because people elect their leaders based on certain political beliefs. And every president is committed to protect national interests.
Ambassador, one of Russia's concerns that has been repeated is NATO expansion eastwards. And it says that its red line is Ukraine becoming a member of NATO. Is NATO membership worth holding on to if letting it go could avert war?
We are talking about big issue here. We are not talking about NATO membership. We are talking about the intention of one country to dictate other countries, other sovereign countries, what to do. And this is unacceptable. This is the violation of the international law. This is the violation of the United Nations Charter. For the NATO membership, Ukraine did not aspire to be a NATO member before Russia invaded Ukraine. In 2014, when Russia invaded Ukraine, Ukraine did not declare the intention to join NATO. It was enshrined in our constitution later on, exactly in response to Russian invasion, because we believe that it's only being part of a collective security system that we can guarantee our sovereignty and territorial integrity. Let me remind you that in 1994, Ukraine dismantled the third largest nuclear arsenal in the world. And in return, the nuclear powers promised to protect our sovereignty and territorial integrity. And Russia was one of those powers who signed the so-called Budapest Memorandum. And ironically, 20 years later, it was Russia who actually violated the commitments and invaded Ukraine.
Ambassador, I want to ask about the international diplomacy. You mentioned that, you know, international community is behind you, but I want to know what kind of diplomatic efforts are there behind the scenes that we should be aware about? And is the diplomatic international community doing enough, actually?
I think international community have to take, first the thing that has to be done is to take a strong stand. It's no longer about Ukraine or Russia. We are talking about the sanctity of the international law. If the sanctity of the international law is no longer in place, every country, every United Nations member is threatened, because the whole paradigm of peaceful coexistence is falling out of place. So in that sense, every community member must be concerned. So what we are doing now, we are calling upon the international community to isolate Russia. We know that a lot of countries already responded with devastating sanctions on Russian economy against Russian individuals. However, we believe that all countries should stop trading with Russia. We should disconnect Russia from the international banking system so that the Russian economy will feel hurt and they will pay the price. We have to hold them accountable for what they are doing now.
Yeah, you mentioned sanctions and economic ones. One consideration is, of course, cutting Russia off SWIFT, which is the International Payment Gateway System. But the world seems rather divided by this. So you have Boris Johnson, UK Prime Minister, rather keen. But on the other hand, you have Joe Biden maybe a little bit more cautious about this. What's your view on it?
We believe it's a necessary step because so far, the blood of Ukrainian civilians, of Ukrainian children and women that were killed during the airstrike on strikes on peaceful cities on the hands of those who will be trading with Russia.
Ambassador, can I ask about your thoughts on reactions from the Asia-Pacific region, especially from China and ASEAN? I believe China has at this stage not commented on what's happening in Ukraine, apart from saying that they believe sanctions would be ineffective. What are your thoughts on how China should play its role in mediating or in mitigating this situation?
China's position has been very consistent. They uphold the international law and the territorial integrity and sovereignty of every country. And I believe ASEAN countries also share the same values. These are the values that have been also enshrined in the Treaty of Amity and Cooperation in Southeast Asia. Ukraine shares those values. And I've seen some of the statements from ASEAN countries, Singapore, Indonesia, and we welcome. They are very strong statements.
What about Malaysia?
We took a note of the statement of Prime Minister Ismail Sabri yesterday. We believe there is a room for a more clear position on the international law and on the sanctity of UN Charter. So far, we have to be very clear. Who is invader here? Who is the criminal?
And I'm curious, Ambassador, how do you think this will actually even be resolved? I mean, what are the steps towards that? This whole situation, this whole invasion of Ukraine?
I'm being quite optimistic because I believe every war, every military conflict will end up with peace. What needs to be done for that, we have to generate a general and genuine commitment to achieve. All parties have to be really committed to do that. How long and how much effort, how many human lives will it take is the question to Kremlin, to Mr. Putin.
And a final message to Malaysian listeners?
I want to thank you, all Malaysians, because honestly, for the past few days and even weeks, I've been overwhelmed with so many emails, messages, text messages from general public, from business people, some members of royal families here in Malaysia. We thank you so much for all your support and solidarity. Malaysia is a true friend of Ukraine, and we really appreciate it.
Ambassador, thank you very much for speaking with us this morning. This has been The Breakfast Grill with His Excellency Oleksandr Necitelo, the Ambassador of Ukraine to Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.